Hello and welcome to the Unbundled Attorney Mastermind Podcast. My name is Dave Ahrens and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Unbundled Attorney. In this podcast, we interview many of our provider attorneys, as well as some of the leading experts in the industry to isolate the best practices for building internet-generated leads and how to ethically and effectively offer unbundled legal services and other more affordable options in your practice. For more information about our services, visit www.unbundledattorney.com. All right, so I'm looking forward to sharing this episode with you as an interview with David Zavlaski, who's one of our provider attorneys in the Big Apple, New York City. And this is a challenging market, a lot of competition, thousands of lawyers, thousands of people, but a tough market and very expensive to run a practice. He even shares, you know, his monthly expenses on any given month could be anywhere from $8,000 to $10,000 a month right out of the gate. So the prices he has to charge adjust accordingly. There's a limitation of the payment plans you can do. You know, in other areas where, you know, attorneys might take a payment plan of $250 or $500 a month, his minimum right now is $1,000 a month. But it's what the market can bear and what he can bear running his practice. So it's really interesting to see how the economics of an individual locale can impact the degree of flexibility or the ways in which attorneys have to work with folks and still be able to afford to run their practice. And then we also talk a lot about how to relate to people, how to handle the initial call, how to convey credibility on that call, and to get into, make sure the person has a full understanding of what it is you can do for them and that you're an expert in what you do and are professional. And he takes more of what he would describe as a dispassionate approach, where he's very much being a professional and that I'm going to get this job done for you, but isn't necessarily someone that's going to provide a whole lot of emotional support, or at least he doesn't go down that path as much. So it's really interesting to hear the different styles based upon the market you serve and what you have to charge. So it's a great episode with David. So let's get right into it. This interview with David Zavlaski, one of our provider attorneys out of New York City. All right. Hey, Dave, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Really appreciate you coming on and sharing the story. It's been a few months that we've been working together, but from what I've heard through Graham and our chats, I've really been pleased to hear the results you've been able to see in such a short period of time. And we're really looking forward to getting to the bottom of what it is that you're doing that's working so well. So I appreciate you taking the time to share your story.
Sure. No problem. Look forward to it.
Yeah. So maybe a good place to start, Dave, is if you could give us a little bit of background on who you are, where you come from, how you got your start in the practice of law, and then what the focus area and area you serve in your law office.
Sure. So my practice is solely devoted to family and matrimonial law. Divorces, child support, custody, neglect, which is actually something that's pretty rare for private attorneys to do. Almost anything that comes out of there, I do. As far as how I got into it, I've basically been in a solo for going on 15 years. When I was in law school, I worked for a very well-regarded matrimonial attorney here in Manhattan. I'm in New York City.
Uh-huh.
Then after I graduated, I worked for another boutique firm where I was the attorney's only associate. That was about a year and a half. That was very hard work. Her practice was very good. Movie stars and billionaires, literally. But unfortunately that didn't work out, clash of personalities and all that. And at that point I decided, well, I'm going to work for the worst boss in the world, me. And
right.
That's what I've been doing ever since.
When was that you started out? You said 15 years ago?
Yeah, but I've been going on 15 years now. Yeah, as a solo, doing this stuff, working in family and matrimonial law.
Right. And what is it about family law that keeps you focused
that
on
I
this
like?
Area? Obviously that you love or that you like and what is it?
I do love it.
Yeah.
I do love it. I'm a litigator. That's what I do. I argue. I really enjoy standing up in front of a judge, not a jury, because we don't do juries in family law here in New York City, or New York State, rather, and making an argument. I find it to be entertaining, frankly. This is one of the few remaining careers, I think, outside of professional blood sport, where it's you against another person. And there is a winner, and there is a loser. Whether it's you against a pro se litigant, you against another attorney, ultimately, it's who has the better argument, who has the better grasp of facts, who has the better facts. And I enjoy that. It's a game, and it's a very enjoyable one. If I'm going to do something for the rest of my life, I want to enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, when you do win those battles, that means that parents get to spend more time with their kids and it impacts their lives in a positive way too. So it's winning those battles is really critical for those people's lives as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So maybe where we could start, we were just talking before we got started here a little bit about how closely you track the numbers, which, you know, there's a wide variety of how into the numbers attorneys will get when they run their practice. Some, you know, taking spreadsheets on all the different, you know, variables and metrics. Others kind of taking it as just a bird's eye view. Things are going good. So can you talk about why you take, you know, maybe share a little bit since we beginning about the numbers you've seen from the leads, but also maybe talk a little bit about why it is that you feel it's so important to keep close track of the numbers in your firm.
Well, let's start with the second part first, why it's close to keep. Look, it's very important for anybody to know if the money that they're putting into their practice, especially for us, we're not IBM. And when I say we, I'm assuming most of the people who are listening to this. We're not IBM. We're not, we're not HP. We are all small business people. Every dollar that we put into our business, we want to make sure that dollar is working for us because those dollars are limited. So yeah, that's why it's important, especially for something like advertising, which can be very ephemeral. It's sometimes, depending upon what kind of marketing you do, you may not know what you're getting back. Back when the Yellow Pages was a thing and lawyers used to put their ads in the Yellow Pages, I would assume that they would be asking people who called them based upon those ads, so where'd you hear about me? And that's something I do all the time. If I don't know, if the name of the person who's calling me is not familiar, I always ask, where'd you hear about me? Usually with Unbundled, that's not the case because I will know when somebody reaches out to me through that. But if it's for something else, if it's a personal referral, if it's some other way, something they saw, they heard me here or there, you always want to know if the time and the money that you're putting into marketing is working for you. But with Unbundled, it's easy. You have a list of all of your leads, and you can keep track of it. You can just keep track of how much money you're putting into it. If you don't want to count per lead, you could just look at your bill when you guys send it every 2 weeks, and then figure out how many of those clients have you closed, and just how much money have you made, both in how much money they've paid already and how much you have left on receivables.
Yeah. So what? Yeah, I was going to ask. So what specifically are the numbers that you tend to keep track of in order to stay on top of the health of the way thing? Any, you know, obviously our advertising source being the leads, and any other practice, any numbers you might track in your practice.
Sure. For Unbundled, the way I do it, I mean, I don't have the time, and I would say the patience probably to do a detailed analysis, but I don't think it's necessary. You look at the amount of money that you've spent, say, for the last month, and then you look at how many clients you've closed. If you really want to be specific, look at the retainer agreements they've signed. If you don't want to be specific, I mean, for example, for me, I know that my average retainer is about $4,500. I charge $300 an hour, and the average I charge people is about for an initial retainer is for 15 hours of my time. So $4,500. I'm closing, between four and five new cases a month from the leads from Unbundled. So that's about $18,000, usually about $5,000 what I collect when they first come in and sign up, and then the rest is in receivables. I'm paying on average about $2,000 a month for the leads. So yeah, you're looking at about a 10x return on investment, which is very good. It's better than most. I've used other services. I use a service called Legal Match. I don't know if that's okay to mention your competitor, but
yeah, of course.
I've been using them forever. I'd say at least 5-6 years. And while I've been using them for that long, because I see a better return on investment, but it's definitely not 10 to 1, I would say my return on investment with them is probably closer to 3 to 1 or 4 to 1, mostly because they're the leads that they send me. They don't just send to me, but they send to several different attorneys, whereas the leads that you guys send are leads that are just for me. The other thing I find that's very interesting, and it's only been with your service, is that when I would say 40% of the time, they'll contact you before you contact them.
Right.
The people, I don't know what you're doing on the back end, what kind of advertising you're putting out there, but the people that are looking, that come across your ads, the eyeballs that come across your ads, are very desperate ones. They're people who need help now. Not in a month, not in 2 months, but now. And for family law, that's very important, because family law has always been a very immediate thing. Other practice areas, maybe not so much. I don't know how it works. I don't know how unbundled works for other practice areas. But the people who come to me are people who need help in a very short period of time. A person who I was in court for this morning retained me less than a week ago.
Right. It says, I have court in 1 week. You know, I really need to get this taken care of right away.
Exactly. Or at least I need to have somebody to help me take care of it, because things go very slowly in New York City. I hear from colleagues outside of New York City and in other states where the average case, let's say a custody case, the average custody case takes about 6 months. Not a divorce, just straight custody. Parties are never married. Average custody case in New York City, is probably about a year and a half. If you're in Brooklyn and Kings County, it's 2.5 years. If you're in Richmond County, which is Staten Island, it's less. It's about maybe a year. But things take a long time because we are so populated.
Right, exactly. And given that you've had a lot of experience working with lead generation companies for a number of years, can you talk about the importance? Well, maybe start with the process by how you're receiving the leads and what your initial, you know, from maybe that first call, you know, how quickly you get back to people. Maybe talk a little bit about the importance of that, and then also what your goal is on that initial call once you get them on the line.
Well, as far as I try as best I can to get them as soon as possible. Sometimes it's just not possible, unfortunately. I'm in court. And a lot of times I've found that I will get leads overnight. People coming home from work, probably incredibly nervous and not sleeping because they're going through one of the most difficult things in their lives, and they're online looking for help. And you know, it's sometime at 2 a.m. Boom, they find you and they fill out whatever form they fill out, and there you go. But the sooner you can get to them, the better, I've found, because first of all, they're incredibly appreciative. That's the first thing. They're incredibly appreciative. If you are prompt with them, they will be very appreciative. And the other thing is that you want to get to them first before they look for another way to find an attorney. So that's the other thing. It's very important to try to get to them as soon as possible. It's not always mandatory, but it's important, and it helps. It helps a lot.
And it's a little bit different when you're receiving an exclusive lead versus when you have maybe, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 other lawyers calling the exact same lead. And so it's kind of a rush to the phone to get to them first.
You're absolutely right. But the thing is, again, we're in New York City. If I were in a more sparsely populated area, there may not be a lot of family lawyers who work in a particular county. Here, even though relative to all the other attorneys, there aren't a lot of family lawyers, let's just say that I'm not the only one.
Yeah. So I don't know what if we went on a list of how many lawyers, but it's be in the thousands for sure. And so there's a lot of competition. And we've talked a lot about this on previous podcast episodes, that not only are people really appreciative when you get back to them, but you know, they're serious about moving forward, like you said. And so it's important to be able to get back to them soon. Otherwise, they're going to keep looking and hire someone else because they're really ready to move forward as quickly as they can.
Absolutely. But then once you get them on the phone, you have to convince them that you're the person that they're going to really want to use. And I found that the best way to do that is to try to get into as much of the nitty-gritty of their case as you can based upon what they tell you. At the very least, give them an idea of what it is that you want to try to do for them based upon the information that they give you over the phone. And once, because I have heard, and again, this is usually what I hear from clients who have used other attorneys or are looking for other attorneys, they call somebody and that person gives them a short shrift. They say, okay, what's your problem? Okay, come into the office and we can talk about it. Well, anybody can do that. Any schmuck can do that. Anybody could say the same thing, and you still don't know if the person on the other end of that phone knows what they're doing. But if somebody comes to me and they say, well, I'm going through a custody situation, what can I do? If you devote 10, 15 minutes of your time to giving them some analysis of their specific situation, with the caveat that you're using, that you're obviously only talking about you know, you're basing this on their, only what they're telling you. But if you at least do that, that person at least going to know that they're not talking to a paralegal. They're talking to an actual attorney who knows what they're doing, who's done this before. One of the best things that I find is I ask people, one of the first questions I ask them is, do you have a court date and when is it?
Right.
But then once I find that out and I find out where they're in court, I can ask them, what's the name of your judge or your referee or your magistrate? And more often than not, I'm familiar with that person, and I will be able to give them some insight into who that person is, which helps a lot.
Yeah, that's really going to help with your credibility of your experience in working in that court, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. If, for example, I'll give you another real world example. About 3 weeks ago, had somebody contacted me through Unbundled. And I figured out based upon where they live, their accent, their name, that they were Orthodox Jewish or some either Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox, but conservative, something. And that's a particular community here in New York City. And then when I found out who their judge is, I happened to know this judge was also raised in that same community. And I told them that. And I told them how that could reflect on their case, how this person would have more of an understanding of certain aspects of their case than a judge who didn't grow up that way, and how that could affect them in a positive or a negative way. And this,
right.
I mean, and no skin off my nose to tell them this, but now this person looks at me as somebody who's perhaps has a little inside knowledge into the way things happen.
Right. So you're really taking the time to not only listen to their situation, but also give them some insight into the level of experience and knowledge that you can bring to them, which, you know, obviously they can interpret that as, you know, benefit to them and their ability and giving them a better chance of, you know, winning their case and getting what they want out of what they're seeking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They have to feel confident, especially with, I think we talked about this before before we started this, where people who come across the website and are concerned that these are not real lawyers, that these are paralegal services or something. And once they get past that and they realize the person they're talking to on the phone isn't just some lawyer, but a lawyer who really knows what they're doing, it gets them past that, which is important because your client has confidence in you.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned something that, you know, one of the clients that came through was an Orthodox Jewish person. One of the things that's unique about New York City, obviously, is you have people from every country, every walk of life, you know, all over the world, different religions, Italians, Chinese, I mean, you know, every kind of culture and background.
Yeah.
I would assume by living there, you get a feel for, you know, how different people relate. Can you maybe share a little bit about maybe over the years, whether it be personality types or certain type of people, like the ways in which you've found ways to adapt and relate to people differently? But, you know, I mean, in other cities that don't have the diversity, you know, maybe it won't be as relevant, but certainly personality types are, and the way people's backgrounds are. Can you talk a little bit about how, you know, running your practice for so long as you have in New York, what that's taught you about relating to certain different types of people based on their background?
What I have found is that what people want more than anything else is to feel comfortable with the person who they're speaking with. And what I try not to do is to, so to speak, give people the high hat. I try to meet them to a certain extent on their level, but at the same time, letting them know, I know more than you when it comes to this. My personal favorite clients are people who are professionals but not lawyers. Doctors are great because they need to understand that in the same way as somebody goes to them for their expertise, that's what they're doing here. I'm not a plumber. I'm not a mechanic. I am a family law attorney, and you have a family law problem, and you're coming to a specialist to resolve that problem. I hate to say this to you, but can you please give me half a second? Just, I don't know if you're going to cut this from the podcast, but you just have to give me half a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because, all right, hold on a second. I'm sorry. Okay, I'm back. Sorry about that.
No problem, Dave. Go
Hello?
Ahead. Yeah, I'm here.
Sorry about that. Anyway, so yeah, because somebody may be coming in about 20 minutes, and I need to let them in. Anyway, but that's I find that that's the most important thing, to relate to them on their level, but to let them know that they're dealing with somebody who is not just knowledgeable, but capable. It's one thing to have somebody who's just going to, You say, you know, they know their thing, their thing. But it's another thing, especially when you're talking about litigation, where this person isn't just going to give you advice. This person is going to be with you in court and is going to have to speak on your behalf. It's important that people understand and feel comfortable with the fact that this person is going to be able to do that. And one of the ways I've found I can do that is by when people come, and I can tell them a lot of times, well, I see what your attorney did there, and it was wrong, and this is what I would do.
Right.
And that tends to work. It worked because also I've found that a lot of the people I get from Unbundled, I am not their first attorney. I am their second attorney. And unfortunately, they were burned by the first one. So they really want to know that this is somebody who knows what they're doing. The gentleman who I spoke with earlier today had an attorney in his divorce who is now doing time for embezzlement and other crimes.
Wow.
So obviously this person has been burned pretty badly by their old attorney, and now they need to feel confident that this new person that they're paying money to help them is going to know what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
And how do you balance out, Dave? Because I think a lot of attorneys are trying to find the balance between conveying credibility, explaining to people exactly what they need to do, and delivering value on that initial call so that people feel like walk away from that call feeling like, you know, like they're more informed, they feel more confident no matter what happens, whether they hire them or not. A lot of our attorneys have talked about that. It's a very common theme. And then so there's that proponent, which I, you know, a lot of attorneys share that commitment, but how do you also balance that out with, you know, maybe not giving away the farm, or at least, you know, not getting too in depth where, you know, the person is now getting advice to try to do it themselves, or you're not getting too into the details with someone. Do you have ways to qualify, or how do you make sure that you're balancing out, you know, conveying credibility, getting the details of their case, but at the same time, you know, making sure the person, you know, values that advice and is going to be moving forward to the next step, which is, you know, actually having you know, come on board to work with them.
Right. The first thing I think I do is I always explain to people that it's not enough just to know what to do. You have to have somebody there who can do it. It's not enough to tell somebody, well, this is what I would do or this is how to handle this. But they have to have somebody who knows how to do it. I can sit down and read a book about fixing a car all day long. I still won't know how to get under a car and fix it because there are nuances to it that I don't know. Same thing comes with the advice you get from an attorney. An attorney can say, well, I can do X, Y, Z. I can tell them it's time to file a motion to dismiss, for example. I won't tell them that I'm not going to write the motion for them unless they pay me, but I can tell them, for example, you know, again, using a real-world example, somebody came to me and they have a situation where they are the mother, the father passed away, and now the paternal grandmother is looking to take custody of their child. So after getting the whole story, I tell them, look, what I have to do is I have to file a motion to dismiss because this is what happened, this is what the mother said, and I don't believe that she has made, the grandmother said, and I don't believe that she has made the proper, she hasn't done it properly and it can be dismissed. And I can explain to them in very broad strokes what's going to happen and what the basis for a motion to dismiss is, but I'm not going to give them case law and I'm not going to tell them how to do it. And the more complicated I make it seem, the more they're going to want to hire me because they're going to realize there is no way that they can do this themselves.
I guess
I use a lot of little cliches, but one of the things I tell people either over the phone or at a consultation is that most of the time the people come to me are going through some of the very hard things in their life. A lot of times this is one of the hardest things that people are going through. And I tell them that, and I understand that you're going through something very difficult right now. And to you, this is awful. But to me, this is Friday. This is just another case. I've done a million of them, and I'll do a million more, and I can help you with yours. And I think that once people understand that they're dealing with an expert, that they're dealing with somebody who really understands what's going on and can handle it, and can handle it in a kind of a dispassionate way, in a workmanlike way, in a professional way, they feel like that's the person who they want to use. Not somebody who's going to cry along with them. Not somebody who is going to, feel their pain. I don't think people, honestly, when people come to a lawyer, they're not coming to a priest and they're not coming to a shrink. They're coming to a lawyer and they want somebody who's professional. And you show them that and they will bite. At least they do for me.
Yeah, I really get that, and I like that perspective of, you know, people are really looking for that, you know, some people at least, you know, are really looking for comfort in the knowing that this guy does this all day long. This is all he ever does every day. He's an expert in it, knows the judge, knows the magistrate. So they didn't have confidence to kind of just give their cards over to you and just feel comfortable that you know what you're doing and you know how to do it. I mean, that's really why someone's hiring a lawyer, is they want to feel like, you know, all the uncertainties, all the things they don't know, someone that really, you know, has experience and does this all day long is taking it over. And so, you know, being able to convey that so they can feel comfortable within that knowledge and grounded in that is a really important aspect of that, you know, especially in the initial call, is to make sure that the person feels like, you know, you're going to be good, they're going to be good hands, and that you know what you're doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially when it's something like this. This is family law. This is their kids. It's their lives. A lot of people, it's their house. It's, you know, it's the most important things in their life.
Yeah.
And they need to know that. They need to understand that.
Okay.
They need to understand that you want.
Go ahead.
No, I just said that they need to understand that you understand that. That's all.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So it sounds to me like the call is broken up into maybe two or three segments. Number one is introduction, them explaining a bit of what's going on. Number two is where you're really kind of getting into some details, asking about the judge, the magistrate, their case, who their previous attorney was, what exactly happened, and kind of give some, you know, like you said, broad strokes information about what needs to be done, how, you know, and, you know, how to proceed from here, basically. And through that conveying credibility. How do you then transition? What is the next step of your initial consultation? Is it for them to come in and meet with you in person? If so, are they paying a fee for that? And so, and or are you essentially doing the enrollment over the phone and they're coming in just to pay? I mean, what's that next step that you're doing from there on that initial call?
Well, the next thing is to qualify them, I think. And I have to give Graham the rep that originally contacted me from Unbundled and the person who works with me, I have to give him credit that this is I find this approach works very well, and I never thought about it doing it particularly this way, but it does work. So what I ask them, and I'm sure that everybody who's listening does something along the same lines, I ask them, how much money do you have available if you're going to hire an attorney in the next couple of days? And I'll get pushback on this a lot. I don't know how well this works in other parts of the country, but I found that New York City is a very unique place. The demographics are different. The prices are different for things. It's much more expensive to live here, and everybody understands that. And a lot of times I'll get pushback, and what they'll say is, well, that's what I want to know, rather than just giving me a number. So I explain to them that I charge an hourly rate and that I require an initial consultation, and what my hourly rate is and what my initial consultation is. But the reason I ask them that question is because a lot of times the people who come to me through Unbundled are people who may not have that entire amount available immediately. So what I need to know is how much they have available, and then we could work out a payment plan possibly. I need to know if they can, and if they can, we'll work out a payment plan where they can pay me over a period of time, but I need to know how much we're starting with.
Sure.
And I think that when people know that you're willing to work with them, that you're not just going to say, well, it's 7,000. Well, I don't have 7, I have 5. I'm sorry, it's 7, and they hang up the phone. And there are people out there, there are attorneys like that. And that's why people say that they don't have the money to hire an attorney. People will find money if they think that there's value in it. But you have to help them a little bit. You have to let them know that you're going to work with them, and they're going to be so happy to pay you. They're going to be so happy that they have a competent, excellent attorney who they can afford. They're going to be ecstatic to pay you. I have somebody who I don't even have to run after her. She pays me, just doesn't tell me about it, just sends me money. It's beautiful. I have several from Unbundled, and it's beautiful because they're so happy that they have somebody who will help them with their very, very personal and particular problem, that they're happy to pay.
Mm. And how was it that you were able to help them, Dave, when maybe other attorneys hadn't? I mean, because a lot of clients, as you know, come to you and you ask them, have you spoken to attorneys? And they're like, yeah, this guy wanted, you know, $5,000 all up front or $8,000 all up front. I mean, and you're right that New York, especially Manhattan, where you're servicing, and Kings County and so forth, is a different market. I think it's got to be top three most expensive places to live in the entire United States. And so people earn a lot, but they also expect things are going to be expensive, and they spend a lot too. So it is unique as a market, generally speaking. But what are the types of options that you've been working with or playing with that allows you to be able to work with folks that other attorneys may just turn away?
Well, I ask them that first question, how much? And once they get past the initial off-putting of somebody just asking that kind of a question, because most people don't approach it that way, so let's say for the sake of argument that they have $1,500 of a $4,500 retainer. Once I explain to them...
One of the things I want to circle back on here is when you ask someone, have you spoken to attorneys? Do you have an idea what they charge? Can you give me an idea of how much you have available to put towards the case? Some people will just tell you, but other people are going to be like, well, how much does it cost? That's what I want to find out. So how do you typically handle that or address that when people are reluctant to tell you where they're at financially?
So what I do is I explain to them that the way I work and the way most family law attorneys work is that we have an hourly rate and a retainer against which we charge. And I explained to them that my hourly rate's about $300 an hour, and my retainer, my initial retainer, is $4,500, could be more depending upon what the issues are. But so what? Once I explain that to them, and I tell them, and then I explain to them that most of the people who come to me through Unbundled are people who don't necessarily have that money right then and there. So I need to know how much they have available initially so that I can then determine if we can work together and if I can give them a payment plan that they can afford. The way I work with the payment plan is I've found over the years that people who are in a situation, most people can afford about $1,000 a month, more or less. So, for example, it's a $4,500 retainer, and somebody says, well, I only have $500. I say, okay, that's fine. We could start off with $500, and I can give you anywhere from 90 to 120 days to pay, which translates to about $1,000 a month for them. And I'll be honest with you, if somebody can't afford $1,000 a month, at least for the initial retainer, at that point, it's probably not worth it. Or if somebody can't scrape up $500 to start a case, I don't think that they'll be able to pay.
Yeah.
And at those people, I can't help. But as long as they can come up with at least $500, then we can go to work. I can help them, and they're usually happy. They're usually very happy to have somebody who's going to be helping them and working with them.
Yeah, well, that makes sense, as well, in the sense that you're working in New York, and so not only our people have more income, but they've got more costs, and also you have more costs. It's really expensive to live in New
Absolutely.
York, and so where in maybe Oklahoma City or Tulsa or something like that. An attorney could take payments of, $200 a month and be fine because of, when you're dealing with a New York market, it's, going to be times 3 to 5x, just because of what, it costs to rent, rent a house and own a house and also rent an office and operate a business there too.
Just to give people some perspective, the listeners some perspective, those who work in the smaller markets, I have in my suite of offices, I rent my office, which is probably, let's say for the sake of argument, it's 150 square feet. And I have two work carrels that I rent for my two paralegals. And I pay $3,200 a month just for that. That's my straight up business overhead before phones, anything else, before paperclips. That's just to have an office, to have a space to work, to have a space to meet clients. So yeah, it's the economics are different.
What do you think?
Are also different.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's both, right? So what do you think is your monthly nut just to run your practice before, paying everything, including your rent, your phones, everything like that, just to run a practice in New York City?
That's very easy. My monthly nut to run a practice, to run my practice, is probably the office is about 32. The office is 3,200. About another $3,000 for my paralegals. So that's 7.5. And let's say $1,000 for incidentals.
Right. So just
$8,500.
Just for you to, well, that's almost $10,000 actually. No, I'm sorry. I did some math. So about $8,000. Yeah, you're right. So just before when you walk in, the first $8,000 needs to go to just bills and expenses. Whereas if I were to compare that to some of the other attorneys you've had on a podcast, let's say in Oklahoma City or wherever, it might be half that, if that. And so, I guess the thing for a lot of attorneys to consider is to figure out where they can be flexible whenever they can, and also based upon their market and the going cost of things and also what it costs to run a practice. And you have to factor all those numbers in. I would assume that a lot of clients
are very happy and surprised when you're willing to start working with someone for, you know, $500 down and about $1,000 a month relative to what every other attorney, most attorneys typically require in your region.
Absolutely. And it really comes, the only way to do this is to have, to a certain extent, a volume practice. And you have to always balance that with, well, can you service the clients in a way that they'll be happy? So a lot of it comes from taking cases in a smaller region. I try to work in just three counties. I try not to roam to the Bronx or to go to Queens, although sometimes it's unavoidable, because you need to be able to do two cases in a day, three cases in a day. You may have to, but you also have to have the time to come back to the office and do the work or make sure the work gets done, the paperwork involved in any kind of a case. So you have to service the clients. The clients need to know that they're not walking into a mill. They're walking into an attorney's office who's going to handle their case in the best way possible.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and it's going to be a wide variety. So, and you mentioned that you're handling kind of a volume practice. That's the way that works. Do you have any tools or systems that you've developed over the years, either working with your paralegals or with technology, that allows you to keep track of, you know, a higher volume of cases, whether it be case management software or anything like that, or just systems you develop to be able to field? Because, I mean, that's one of the commonalities of attorneys working with us specifically as well, is, you know, we send a lot of clients. They're getting a lot more clients than they're used to. And making that transition while still remaining a solo, I mean, other attorneys will hire another attorney, get contractors, and expand, you know, the amount of attorneys that are working on, you know, or how they're handling cases. But in your case, you've stayed as a solo, even with a higher volume. So what are some of the things that you've done to make sure that you're able to still handle the higher caseload while continuing to remain a solo?
Well, the first thing is handling the volume of potential leads. Obviously, you don't want to let any go. And for that, I have my paralegal who's about to start law school herself. But what she does is she does a lot of my initial calls. I will tell her, call these people. We actually share a calendar on Google Calendar. We share a Google Calendar. So what she can do is I put in the Google Calendar, I need to call these people today. And she calls them. When I'm in the office, she'll call them. And she'll call them and try to get them on the phone. And she has a very good phone voice and a very good phone manner, which is very important. But what'll happen is, obviously, you can't keep calling people. Sometimes people are just not there. They put something into the ether and then they just ignore it. So I call people three times, and we have a very simple system that she puts an X next to each one when she calls them. And if it hits three X's, that's three strikes and you're out. We erase it and we move on. As far as other attorneys, so far I haven't gotten to the point where I need to hire other attorneys. And I don't want to work with contractors because, again, I pride myself on doing good work for my clients, and I don't know how good of a work ethic a contractor has. But I did hire my second paralegal soon after I started working with you guys, and he is actually a third year law student who is going to be a lawyer, and he wants to be in this practice. So I'm probably going to hire him once he becomes a real boy, as I like to say, because he becomes a lawyer. But right now, he's doing a lot of my paperwork, and he does it fairly well. I still don't let it out of the office until I review it. But again, if something just captions and all that stuff, if something like that would take me 3-4 hours to do, he does the work, and I can do it in 1 hour just reviewing it.
Right.
And I call him jokingly my keyboard monkey, but that's what he is. And he's very good at it. And now I have been training him to write the way I want him to write. Once he becomes a lawyer, I'm going to start teaching him how to do appearances, not throwing them into a trial initially, but just doing the simple appearances, the initial appearances on family court matters that take up a lot of my time, but don't really accomplish much and are not complicated. So I can have him do it. This would allow me to spend more time in the office. It would also allow me to be on a different case. I can take more caseload that way.
Do you have your first
paralegal? So that's how I've been doing it.
Yeah. Do you have your first paralegal call leads, the initial leads too, when you're out in the court?
Yes, I do. I have her call leads, and I have her, you know, make that initial contact and just let them know we got your information.
Mr. Zaslavsky is out of the office right now. Please let me know when would be a good time for him to call.
Okay.
Or yeah, when you would like to call him.
I wanted to bring that up because, you know, we've had a lot of attorneys that the way they started handling the volume is they started having someone else do the call entirely to book them in to, you know, get them in the door. Whereas, and that the vast majority of the time hasn't worked. So what we've heard is exactly what you're describing, that in certain cases, they've had a paralegal do the initial call to basically get them scheduled to talk to you. But yeah, they don't actually get into the specifics and then explain the fees and all that stuff. It's really just get them on the phone with you, right?
Yeah. Obviously, you didn't see me, but I was shaking my head as you were saying that because that would never work. When you have, first of all, I've learned over the years that cold leads are the hardest leads, and these are essentially cold leads. These people don't know you from Adam, and then you add to the fact that unbundled, while, again, I have nothing but praise for you guys, but because of the way you market, people may come into it already a bit apprehensive. Is this a real lawyer or is this a, you know, or is this a paralegal service, as we said before? So that initial phone contact has to be with an attorney one way or the other. Either it's a paralegal calling professionally saying, Mr. Zaslavsky, you know, we got your information. Mr. Zaslavsky isn't available. He'll call you soon. But I think that it is imperative that somebody needs to speak to a real lawyer who knows and who can assuage their fears, so to speak, before they come in. I will tell you, over the years, and this is since before I started working with you guys, but over the last 15 years, I can count the number of times that people have come in without at least speaking to me a little bit on one hand.
Yeah.
It almost doesn't happen. People need to feel comfortable. They're going to be spending a lot of money and they know it. They're not spending hundreds of dollars. They're spending thousands of dollars. If their case is going to get complicated, ultimately they'll be spending tens or even hundreds of thousands of dollars. So they need to know immediately that the person they're going to be talking to is worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So yeah, I don't think that would be problematic.
Yep, and that's what we found as well. I remember Richard Shannon came on and he said, you know, a lot of firms, they, you know, the secretary gets on the phone and says, okay, well, we can book you in with the grand high poobah. It's going to be $5,000, and you know, you spent 30 years of experience. You can help you out. And you know, and then it's going to be $250 for consultation. And that's like what they say on the first call. And people are like, oh, okay, well, mm-hmm. We'll think about it. And it's just like, it's just gone. But
they never show up.
Well, they won't show up. Yeah, because they don't have any confidence or credibility. Like everything we've talked about in this interview up till now, they need that trust. Like, especially with, you know, we would say cold leads. I mean, it does come through a process, but they have not met you. They don't know who you are
relative
to any other attorney. And so you have to build a relationship first. They have to trust and have a voice and get a sense for the human being that's going to be the person on the line for defending the rights of their kids. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that you're willing to take the time is huge.
Mm-hmm. And even if they don't get any of that, they have to be, at the very least, you may be able to get them interested in what you have to say. Even if you can't do any of those other things, if you have no way of developing any empathy between you and the potential client over the phone, at the very least, give them something where they're going to want to hear your opinion about what they're going through and how they can be helped. And that will get them to actually want to come in.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So I'll ask maybe one final question here, and then we'll just go ahead and wrap up for today. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing so openly about what's been working well for you so far, because we certainly had a great start. But I guess just the final question I might ask is just, you've been doing this for a long time. You work with Legal Match for a number of years. You filled a lot of leads. Were there any mistakes that you made early on or things that you found come up over and over again with, you know, as something that you have to watch out for when fielding leads? Or relating to clients, whoever it might be, that you've learned over these years and that's contributed to some of your success?
The only thing that, especially working cold leads, working with Legal Match, working with this, the only thing that I can think of is practice makes perfect. I've been doing this for many years, and I find that you keep on trying to work different angles until you find something that works for you. But you have to keep doing it. I can't think of any particularly bad thing that I've done. I'm sure I did a number of them. I'd like to think that I learned from them very quickly, and that was a long time ago. But the thing is, I have found that I get better at talking to people, talking to potential clients, the more I do it, the more anybody does it. Practice makes perfect in everything, especially in how to deal with people who are coming at you from, at the very least, a very neutral perspective, not apprehensive. So you need to be comfortable speaking with them. And the only other thing I can possibly say is you have to develop a very thick skin. People say the oddest things. They say the most ridiculous things, especially when they're on the phone talking to a lawyer about their family law issue. I found that the people say just the oddest stuff. And you can't take any of it personally. It all has to kind of roll off your back, because if you let it affect you, it'll drive you nuts.
Well, yeah, and it also impacts the way in which you relate to the very next lead, right? Like the attitude of the person on the phone, how you come, the space that you hold when you're calling each new lead has to be one of service and one of space. And if you let someone kind of throw off, maybe get piss you off a bit, that tonality is going to come through on the next call, and then it's going to cause it. It's why sales agents or anyone doing sales or selling themselves, as all lawyers do, get into momentum where they're doing really well and everyone seems to be enrolling and want to go forward. And then they'll have days when they're off, and it's just, the mentality. And so it's so important. I think that's really, I want to accent that, how important it is to just recognize that the numbers are the numbers, and to greet each call, as a brand new call, as a brand new person that, hasn't met you and you haven't met them, and to come at it from a standpoint of service.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with this, because sometimes you'll walk into your office and you have 5 new leads, and then you have another 20 that you need to respond to, or you want to give them that second or that third call. So you're going to get into that system. You're going to turn into a salesperson, unfortunately. That's just the way of the business. So if you're doing that, you better be able to not let anything anybody says affect you when you're in that mode, selling mode.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, listen, Dave, I really thank you again for taking the time and just sharing some good tips and giving us a perspective into what it's like to run a practice in the jungle of New York City. And also just appreciate your flexibility and the way you're working with folks, even amongst, really high expenses and an interesting demographic of folks you're working with. So I thank you for, again, taking the time, and certainly appreciate all the work you're doing for the clients we're sending you there.
Thanks for the opportunity. You have a good day.
Absolutely. All right. And with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up. For everyone else that's listening, we certainly appreciate your participation in the podcast. If anyone else that can benefit from it, feel free to share it around, because that's how we grow the show and impact more lives of attorneys and the people that they serve. So thanks for your support of the show, and we'll see you all on the next episode. For more information about how our lead generation services can help you grow your practice, visit our website at www.unbundledattorney.com. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please be sure to subscribe so you get each new episode as soon as it's available, and leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Once again, thanks for listening.